My name is Ari, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ari.
Hi. I would like to start out by saying I have tissues and cough drops, so put it all together. There's going to be nose blowing on this recording, and I apologize to anyone who has to listen to recorded nose blowing, if anyone ever downloads this. We tonight are starting step three. We're going to be starting in how it works, and you know, basically, I just want to kind of review a little bit and say that, so step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And in doing so, basically said, okay, my way doesn't work. I can't successfully drink or do whatever I do and have my life work. And other people seem to have a way of working on this and getting their life together, and so I'm gonna be open to a different way of attacking this problem, and that is step two. And you know, at the end of last week's meeting, this has been with me all week from We Agnostics. One of our members pointed out how I just want to find this on page. Oh my goodness gracious! Pointed out how, you know, we do a couple things and then God makes it possible for us to do everything else. You know, I don't remove my own obsession. I don't keep myself sober. This is something that, you know, I become willing to believe, and then I get out of the way and I do a couple of right actions, and then all of a sudden, I have a completely different life. In the doctor's opinion, we talked about having a psychic change. We talked about a rearrangement of thoughts and actions. So by the time I'm reading How It Works with my sponsor or my sponsees, I'm probably acting differently. Hopefully, I'm not drinking. That would be preferable. And I'm probably taking some direction not of my own making, because I've come to believe that a power greater than myself, which is pretty much everything at this point, is a power greater than myself, is going to restore me to sanity. There are many definitions for sanity, but in my life, it is not being constantly ruled by my emotions. Many, many, many moons ago, when I went to a treatment center, the one thing that I took a couple things away from it. But one of the things is these Father Martin videos taught us about intellect over emotions. And alcoholics in full, you know, flight from reality, this alcoholic for sure, when I'm living with my emotions over my intellect, when I'm in a situation where my feelings are running the show, there is no God in that. That is just, I envision myself as a toddler. And a bunch of my friends have toddlers right now, which is kind of awesome, because I kind of get to watch them, and three-year-olds, and I kind of get to watch them be really frustrated when they can't get their way. And I'm like, that is totally what I look like when I'm running my life with emotions over intellect. Because I have proof. I have actual proof, which is faith. I have proof that God has taken care of me if I showed up and did the next indicated action. And I like that phrase, is what they say, I think, out on the West Coast. Because the next right thing, it's not always so clear. The next indicated action, that's usually pretty clear. You know, sometimes the next indicated action is to go home and wash the dishes that are in my sink. It doesn't seem like a really big deal. It's the next indicated action. So by the time we get to How It Works, I have hopefully been disabused of the notion that I can figure this out on my own. I have hopefully been disabused of the notion that self-knowledge is going to help me. But if I haven't, our friends who wrote this book have something to say. I was thinking, like, maybe we get into some inventory, start looking at inventory tonight. But when I just came back from a little tiny retreat that I do with some sober women friends of mine three times a year, and I realized how important the first six pages of this chapter were, so we're probably going to stay squarely in the third step, and we are going to pray tonight. And I hope that doesn't make you uncomfortable, but like my friend James used to say, if God scares you out of AA, booze will scare you back in. So, I'm just kidding. It's warm, or I'm warm, I don't know. So, we're going to start with how it works, and we're going to leave plenty of time for discussion tonight, because this is, everything is meat and potatoes, but this is like prime rib. So, here we go. Page 58, chapter 5, how it works. Now, for those of you that don't think about things really specifically in terms of language, this really could not be any clearer. This is how AA works. This is how the program of recovery works for alcoholics. Not my program or your program, but the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just heard someone whisper, this rarely used to say never. And in the first manuscript of Alcoholics Anonymous, rarely did used to say never. And I can say that in the many years that I've been around AA, including my own years of failing, I did not thoroughly follow the path when I failed. And I have to say that I God will meet me where I'm at. Like it said in We Agnostics that, you know, God doesn't make harsh terms with those who seek him. I sought God and kind of thoroughly followed the path and still was able to make some headway. So to seek God and like thoroughly follow this path means that life beyond my wildest dreams, that fourth dimension that Bill talked about in his story, it's kind of amazing. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. So constitutionally incapable, we're not talking about the U.S. Constitution. We're talking about that the Constitution, the makeup, who they are, the strength of the disease of alcoholism and their soul sickness makes them unable to be honest with themselves or other people. And the truth is, for me, I couldn't be honest with myself before I was honest with somebody else. I didn't even know what honest was. And I was delusional. You know, in this book, people say denial, you're in denial. No, delusion is what we discuss in this book. I was deluded into thinking my way of life was normal. I was deluded into thinking my thinking was normal. And I also was deluded into thinking that my alcoholism was someone else's fault. And that my behavior, my alcoholism was a good excuse for my bad behavior. And I can tell you that today, it may explain my behavior, but it's certainly not a good reason for it. It wasn't when I was drinking, and it's not now, because sometimes I still have alcoholic behavior. The reasons why people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program will be discussed more thoroughly as we move on. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. The following is my opinion. It is not the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is an opinion of a physician involved. Many years ago, when I first came to AA the last time, which is like a very complicated algorithm, but it was not my first time in AA, but it was, God willing, my last time. Around 4 months in, I wasn't working any steps, and I kind of had a sponsor, but I wasn't listening to her. And, she said the boy or the book, and I said, well, duh, the boy. And I was, not long after that, I ended up in a hospital because I was so incredibly anxious and depressed and whatever, and they told me that I had a psychiatric disorder. And I ran with that. And it turns out what I had was untreated alcoholism and not a psychiatric disorder, which is not to say there isn't a great correlation according to medical science, of which I am not an expert, but was told by a very renowned physician, that there is a high correlation in alcoholics of having, you know, comorbidities, as they like to call them in the insurance world. With that being said, I have seen people who have the most unbelievable comorbidities recover in this program. They have real deal, like serious psychiatric disorders, not like she's got a, like I've got, you know, this person's got some depression or whatever. The real thing that require lifelong medication and treatment, and they are recovered in this process because approached properly, if you straighten out physically and mentally, like we're going to be told in this chapter, and you seek your help from the proper authority, a medical doctor, and you seek your help in relieving the alcohol problem from God, as we've been told, these things can work together. You cannot do one without the other. That is my experience. You cannot receive help for a physical illness that involves your spirit without getting help for your spiritual illness. So to address one without addressing the other is fruitless. But it can be done. And the only other thing I want to say is that our tradition says we have no outside opinion on... We have no opinion on outside issues. I have experience. I'm not sharing... So when I said I'm sharing my opinion, I'm sharing my experience and my opinion. And I encourage you that if you have questions regarding medical issues, you take them to an AA member with experience or your physician, and do not air them in the rooms of AA to get a lot of people's experience, because there are people who think that their opinion is fact and it can be dangerous and hurt people. And I've seen people hurt as a result. So, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So I decided I didn't want what I had, and I might want what you had, and that was enough. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. I tried that, like 7 times. Didn't work. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Old ideas, to me, are the basis of what holds me back in every day of my sobriety. Every day I wake up, and there's some old idea in the back of my head that's going to be trying to direct the way that I go. Initially in sobriety, it was that I couldn't live without... I mean, when I was 19, it was, my life's going to be boring. You know, when I was 25, it's, you know, I'm in too much pain. When I was 29, it was how am I physically going to live without alcohol and other substances. Then there's, you know, this time it'll be different. There's all these ideas, if I don't drink long enough, and if I stop long enough, I could start again, and it'll be like all these delusions that I have. But they're all ideas that came from somewhere. And letting go of old ideas is the overwhelming theme of every day of my life. It's the thing I have to do every day is let go of old ideas. And I'm surprised it's not in italics. I think it should be in italics, personally. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Not when you're done with the steps. Not in a year. Not later. Not like forever ago. But, you know, immediately. Now. With an exclamation point. Not kidding around. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Which kind of explains why when I came to AA and I kind of went to meetings and I kind of hung out with people, but I didn't really do this work, I didn't really get any results. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, which we talked a lot about in Bill's story, and we talked about in We Agnostics, that you don't have to believe in my God. You don't have to believe in any God that is purported by any religious body anywhere. You can just have your own conception of God. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We're entirely ready to have God, not me, God, remove all these defects of character. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And again, this is the ninth step, not the second. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. I can't imagine how many people heard saw the 12-step window shade, and there should have been like a little red line at the bottom that says, "You don't have to do this perfectly." Because I saw them the first time when I went in a meeting, because God knows I didn't pick up a big book. I was like 17. And I'm like, no. I didn't think it was possible. Spiritual progress means we just keep trying. We keep putting our best foot forward. We keep doing everything we can. On the other hand, half measures do avail us nothing. So if after I've done this work one time, I know if I'm really trying or if I'm just kind of screwing around. I know the truth. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought. So those ABCs, it's elementary that they're ABC, because that's the deal. I'm alcoholic, and I cannot manage my own life. No human power has been able to relieve my alcoholism yet. I mean, even if you get locked up, you could make jailhouse moonshine or get your hand on drugs or you just, wait until you get out and start again. And I've never sought God that I haven't gotten what I needed. And that is definitely my experience. I know hundreds. I was at an international convention. There's like 80,000 people. And that was their experience. It was mind blowing. And I don't like crowds. I really don't like crowds. I think the thing that's most interesting here, because just so happens that I'm one of those like English grammar people, is that this is an intense, rarely discussed past, unless you go to college for English, called the present perfect tense. It's the tense that always will be. It's the idea that these things happen now and in the future. So there could have been other ways to word this in this book. It could have been said in a way that let it be, okay, right now I can't manage my own life, but eventually I will be able to. But these phrases, these statements, these convictions were worded in a way that make them true if I read them my first day of sobriety or my 300,000th day of sobriety. And that is so, huge for me. Because when it comes back, when people talk about getting back to basics, who am I? What is this all about? This is where I go. I go to the ABCs. I am alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life, not on day one and not today, that no human power can have relieved my alcoholism. That means that as much as I want you to fix me when I'm feeling crappy, you really can't, and it's up to me to go to God for it. And that God continues to, if I continue to seek God. But it's up to me to seek. That sought is this wonderful word that is past, present, and future. Gives me goosebumps every time. So being convinced of A, B, and C, we were at step three. So really everything up to here and how it works is a review of all the concepts that we talked about in steps one and two and in the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. And hold on, excuse me, please. Nothing's more exciting than blowing your nose and being recorded. Thank you, God, for my humility. Okay, so being convinced we are at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Thank God they're going to explain it, right? When I first came to AA in the late 80s, I hadn't found people that were working this book, the steps out of the book this way. And people would actually do this thing in meetings. Sorry, people that are listening. Turn it over. They do a hand motion. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I was like, turn what over? Like, or give it to God. And I'm like, is there like a drop-off spot? Or like, where do you go to do this to give it to God? And I just, it was so hard for me to grasp. And little did I know that the thing was holding up my coffee table had the directions in it. I just didn't know it was there. It wasn't my time. So, the first requirement. So this isn't a suggestion, folks. This isn't a maybe you should. This is a requirement. Is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. My life was run on self-will when I got here. My life is often still run on self-will. On that basis, so the basis of self-will, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody. Like, did you try parking here tonight? That's pretty crazy. Even though our motives are good. So my motives were good. I wanted to come here and share my experience, but I could have gotten ugly in that parking lot. I could have, but I didn't because I prayed a lot on the way here. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Think about a toddler. Again, I think about a toddler. Think about myself as a toddler. And I just wanted to go. You know, little kids just want to go. But they don't know any better. They're running. You know, that kind of like forward motion where they're almost always a little bit at a 45-degree angle. And then they fall over. And they stop when they run into something. And that's kind of what I'm like as an alcoholic, is that I'm always going, but I don't necessarily know where I'm going. I think I know what I'm going towards, but my method of, you know, getting there is kind of sometimes not great. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. So when I read this with my sponsor the first time, she was kind enough to put in my name for me. I'm going to do it so you guys can hear how ridiculous it sounds. I'll use my own name because it's still true today. Everybody, including Ari, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, Ari may sometimes be quite virtuous. She may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, she may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, she is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. She begins to think life doesn't treat her right. She decides to exert herself more. She becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit Ari. Admitting she may be somewhat at fault, she is sure that other people are more to blame. Ari becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. That was actually this week. What is her basic trouble? Is she not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? is Ari not a victim of the delusion that she can rest, and that's like rest, like wrestle, like, you know, that thing on USA on weeknights, rest, satisfaction, and happiness out of this world if only she manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things Ari wants? And do not Ari's actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is Ari not, even in her best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Oh. I have to tell you that at almost 16 years, it kind of sucks that that's true sometimes still. I mean, to some extent every day. It gets confusing because, you know, when you work and you're in business and you're making deals, like sometimes you have to be a little self-seeking. Like sometimes you have to look out for your own best interests. But it's, you know, where do you cross that line? So if you've never read that aloud with your own name in it, I suggest you go home and do it. And then record it, like, on your phone and play it back for yourself. You will have quite an experience. So we're talking about, you know, basically what? Here's the toddler again. The alcoholic toddler wants their own way. I want you to act a certain way. I want things to go a certain way. I'll be very nice at first, and then I'll get angry, and then I'll manipulate, and then I'll have a fit. And people are like, I don't really want to be around her. You know, this is how alcoholics end up alone all the time, right? Alcoholics end up alone because they push everyone in their life away because their behavior is insanely miserable. And you notice that, I don't know, if you drink long enough, you end up with no friends. Your family doesn't want anything to do with you. People are like, oh, you know, I laugh. Like, people talk about, not laugh, but I kind of bitterly laugh, because people are like, oh yeah, I still have a couple friends. I'm like, from high school. And I'm like, you do? Because I didn't get sober for the final time till I was just turning 30, and I literally have one friend that I went to high school with who's back in my life, and it's only because we're both in recovery. I burned every bridge I ever had because I was angry, indignant, self-pitying, selfish, self-seeking. I was the person who, if we had plans, but so-and-so had something better, I'd be like, I'd make up a lie and move on. And I always ended up getting caught because I couldn't remember my lies. And, you know, it was whatever was best for me, and I didn't give a crap about anybody else. And because that's what selfishness does to us. So let's read more about it. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. Which is so applicable now. The outlaw safe cracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? All of the above, please. All right. So, they're going to use an exclamation point again. So it's important. I was just throwing away my tissue, Dave. Selfishness. Self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. The root of our troubles. They don't say this anyplace else. Like, they don't throw this around somewhere else in the book and say, well, this is the root of your troubles. No, this is the root of your troubles. Selfishness is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Let me read that again, because it spun me when I first heard it. Sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, so based on what we wanted, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. Wow. It still stops me. Like, it still makes my throat close up, because that means that every hurt, every betrayal, everything that I had experienced in my life prior to having a psychic change as a result of this process, I had a part in. It was partially my fault. And a lot of crappy things had gone on in my life, and hurtful and sad, and the pain and the loneliness that I had created in my life as a result of my really bad behavior was huge. It was like a giant boulder I was dragging around with chains on it. I mean, like really big, like that big rock in Grant Park in Chicago. It's big. And the first time I heard this, I was like shocked, and I didn't know what to do with it. It gets better. So our troubles, it does get better, but it gets a little worse before it gets better. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must, not maybe, not we think you should, not we suggest, must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Underline that, highlight it, draw a circle around it. They're saying that if we're not rid of selfishness, we're going to die. That's not a joke. Oh, and not like we can do it on our own. God makes that possible. Again, it is not something we do on our own. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. And that is as true for me today as it was 16 years ago. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. And for those of you who have a little time in sobriety and have been through this process before, it's mind-boggling how much I have philosophical convictions and moral convictions, and I want to be rid of selfishness and self-centeredness, and I still can't do it without God's help. I'm like, why can't I do it myself? And I can't, because I have to have God's help. There's no point at which you graduate from needing God's help in this journey. It's always that way. Oh, good. There's more information. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. So if you're not an architect or you haven't built something, you probably are not sure what a keystone is. Metaphorically, but actually, keystone is the stone that they lay. That is the very first. It's the very first stone they lay when they're building something. You know, it's the key. It's the beginning of a project. And they're saying that if you're going to build something, if you're going to build a doorway to a new life through this process, that allowing God to be your director is the key. And you can't like build a bunch of other stuff without the keystone, because it'll all fall down. You can't pay it lip service or be well behaved in AA or tell your sponsor what you think they want to hear. Because if you do that, your arch is going to fall on your head and you will not be able to get to the other side where you receive the 10-step promises and alcohol is, you know, not a thing. And you live in a place of neutrality and protection. If you don't put this keystone in place and work to keep it in place, your arch will fall on your head, and those stones are heavy. But, good news, promises, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of tomorrow. Today, tomorrow, or the hereafter, we were reborn. So that's a crazy amount of things that happen from just making a decision to let God be my director. I'm going to be reborn just from letting God be my director. You would think there'd be like a $9.99 shipping and handling fee. Like, that's a lot. If all we have to do is keep close to God and perform His work well, well, if you're anything like me, you didn't even know what that was. I mean, I didn't know what God's work was. And I needed direction, specific direction. I needed to be told how to behave. Honestly, I was like an animal, like a feral animal, and I needed to be told that, you know, you don't hit and, you know, you say thank you and please. And because I had forgotten. I really had forgotten how to behave like a human. I learned by watching the women in these rooms be daughters and mothers and sisters and friends. And I watched people be employees, and I learned, and that's what the we of this program is about, is so we learn how to behave properly. Because in a world where only I and my need to get to the next drink existed, their behavior was not an issue. It just didn't even come up for me. There was only what is important to me and what's next. I remember the first time that I felt this feeling of lightness and power and freedom and being able to breathe as if there was no elephant on my chest, and I could cry just sitting here because it's the best high I ever felt. I couldn't believe that it was possible that I could not be on any drugs or alcohol and feel so free. You know, we come here for relief, and we all come here for different reasons. Some of us come here not to die, and some of us come here because we want to get out of trouble. And I came here to learn how to drink without getting in trouble. I don't know why I came at the end, really. I guess because I figured I had no place. I thought I was going to die if I didn't change my life. And I thought that I was just going to kind of, like, slump along miserably till I died without alcohol. And I never expected to have that moment where I felt elated and free and light, and I just wanted relief, and I got freedom, and I'm like, I remember I called my friend, and I'm like, I think there's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I'm having a manic episode. And she's like, no, that's the third step promises. And I'm like, stop, I can't wait to get some more. So it's funny because when I took on this commitment, Chris said, just take us through like you would take a sponsee. So now we're at step three, and we're going to say the third step prayer. And I'm going to invite you to say it in any way that you're comfortable, out loud. You can get on your knees if you want. It's a hard floor. I'm going to pass on the getting on my knees tonight. And I'm also going to, you know, encourage you that if you've never taken a third step before, you don't feel like you're ready to do it, that you don't necessarily have to do it, but, you know, if you want to take it back later, and you say it now and take it back later, that's okay too. It wouldn't hurt. It's just a prayer. And, you know, there will never be anyone more understanding than the people in these rooms of needing to be rid of you know, the burden that is trying to fix everything on your own. I think the reason that I felt so light after starting to stopping the just having to steer the whole world is because it's too much work. You know, you look at our presidents and how they age so much over 8 years in office. They go from young men to really old-looking men. And, you know, it's amazing that I still have normal colored hair after, you know, 30 years of, you know, being in charge of everything and everyone all the time. It's so much work, and it's so exhausting, and no wonder I had to drink, because it was so much work. So now, you know, if we could just take a moment and, you know, take a deep breath, and I invite you all to, you know, share in this third step moment with me, to say the third step prayer. I say the third step prayer every morning. I've said it every morning for almost 16 years, because the bondage of self is part of my alcoholic mind, and my alcoholic mind is still in my alcoholic head. And until I die, I will have an alcoholic mind, and so I will continue to ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self till I no longer breathe. It's an honor to do this with you, and it's very moving to me, especially, you know, in the current circumstances that I'm in right now in my life, which I can talk about more when the tape recorder's off. So if you'd like to join me, please do, and if you're not comfortable, that's okay too. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen.
Amen.
So, I was young when I got to AA, and now I sponsor girls that I could be their moms, which is weird. And I often tell them that if they're not comfortable with the thys and the thous, that they're free to rewrite this in language that they're comfortable with. But oddly, as I've gotten older, I've gone back to this original writing, this original language, because it's, I don't know, it's comforting, and there's some, what's the word, continuity for me, like feeling connected to our founders and using the words that they had written for us. But it's really, you know, if the sentiment is the same, then that's totally cool. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, but it is better to meet God alone than with one who might understand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, that's at once, not in 6 months, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us from what? Our relationship with God. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And that's where we're going to stop tonight. It's been great for me to read these pages with you this evening, and I hope that you got something out of it too. And is it just the red button?
Yeah.
Okay. My tech guy's coming over now. So and that's it. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say. Thanks.